98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. Brought to you by America Roofing. Honored to protect your family as the number one roofer in Arizona. Online at AmericaRoofingCo.com. 4 o'clock reset.
Time now for the 4 o'clock reset, getting you squared up on all of the top stories of the day. Let's start in the NFL. As Sarah mentioned in her update, it is being reported that the NFL is cutting their preseason schedule in half to just two games. However, Mike Garofolo of the NFL Network just tweeted out a few moments ago that while the expectation for weeks has been that the NFL is going to just go to two preseason games, the NFLPA, the Players Association, hasn't signed off yet, and some in the union leadership continue to question whether it's smart to play any preseason games this season.
Wow. Boy, if you feel that way, you probably feel like you shouldn't play any games at all. I mean, how do you not want to get your players ready to play? I mean, they're cutting the preseason in half. So if there's people in the Players Association, it feels like it's not safe to play any preseason games, but you feel like it's safe to play regular season games?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to make
a whole lot of sense to me, no.
Yeah, also in the NFL today, a report from The Athletic that the NFL is considering requiring fans that will attend games this fall to sign liability waivers shielding NFL teams from COVID-19 lawsuits.
Yeah, that's our poll question today. If you go on the Burns and Gambo page on Twitter, just go to Burns and Gambo on Twitter. That is our poll question. Would you sign a waiver to go to an NFL game? We've got over 2,000 votes right now, and you could go vote too. Just go to the Burns and Gambo page and let us know if you would sign a waiver or not by just clicking yes or no on that poll.
Some concerning trends coming out of Major League Soccer's bubble in Orlando, Florida, as six players from FC Dallas have tested positive for COVID-19 while in Florida. And of course, this does not bode well for the NBA, who will also be holding their bubble in Orlando.
I'm going to save my thoughts on this because this is going to be our topic coming up in just about 10 minutes. But that is a big story that a lot of people should be talking about.
Also in baseball with COVID-related issues, Buster Olney went on Golic and Wingo this morning and said that there is a growing concern within baseball about all of the players adhering to the safety and health protocols.
Can everybody in these clubhouses or, you know, in these team groups start pulling in the same direction? You know, I think in baseball, what we've seen so far, what I've heard, is that it really reflects the conversation going on in this larger country, that there are some players who are all in on the social distancing. They're happy to wear a mask. That's part of their routine. And other players have indicated their teams, this is stupid. This is ridiculous. What are we doing? This is all, you know, this is kind of a joke.
A lot of it is a joke, and a lot of it's ridiculous. But rules are rules, man. And if you don't like it, then don't play. Because they're going to come up with rules, and you're going to have to follow them. And that's just the way it is, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. And we will see as Major League Baseball training camps begin to open up here in just the next couple of days. But our top story of the day revolves around the Phoenix Suns as their head coach Monty Williams was on a Zoom conference call today with reporters and said his team isn't just going to Disney World to have some fun on Space Mountain.
We're all highly competitive, and we're going down there to win games. I don't know any other way I can say it. We're not going to ride on Space Mountain and do the Disney thing. This is freaking Braveheart and Gladiator stuff that we are trying to will onto other teams, and that's the mindset.
It's the longest of long shots for the Phoenix Suns to get into the play-in game or even the playoffs, but Monty Williams was talking all of the right things today, how they're going to go down there and try, and they're going to go down there and try to win as many games as they possibly can.
Yeah, remember, too, outside of the eight regular season games, the other thing you got to think about is they got three preseason games. So this is a great opportunity to, you know, really take a look at players, and they're going to do that. You know, they're going to try to find the right fits, and they got their team. So they will absolutely 100% look at this as a second training camp for Monty Williams and a chance to build some momentum and a chance for guys to compete, and guys will get the opportunity. And, you know, yeah, obviously, you know, signing Cameron Payne gives them another ball handler, even though they've got Javon Carter and they got Okobo and they got Ty Jerome. you know, they want to take a look at another player and give him an opportunity and push those other players. And it's insurance in case somebody pulls up, you know, with a tweak or pulls something or tweaks something. You've got another player now. They had the open roster spot. They might as well use it. So they did it. But 11 games overall, because you got at the three preseason games, it'll be a chance for Monty to really take a look at some of these players.
Speaking of Cameron Payne, the newest member of the Phoenix Suns, Monty Williams was very effusive in his praise for him earlier today.
Cam's a guy that I coached in OKC, and you know, Sam Presti's a guy, you know, he's not someone that makes many mistakes, and so I just feel like Cam is a guy that probably should be in the NBA. And if you look at what he did in the G League and you watch film on him, he's got a burst. He's got a feel for the game that it's hard to teach. And he's still in that age group or in his journey where he's still learning, and he's, you know, he's been humbled. And sometimes you can grab guys like that and put them in a situation and they perform well. So I'm hopeful.
Look, I don't have huge expectations for Cameron Payne, but I don't also think that it's unrealistic to think that he maybe can find a role for himself on this team, because that backup point guard spot for the Suns has been so inconsistent over the last 2, 3, 4 seasons for this team.
Yeah, and it's one of the hardest things in the NBA is to get a quality backup point guard. There's just not that many quality point guards overall. So the chance for a team to have two of them is difficult. And the Suns are going to try really, really hard to go get themselves a quality backup point guard to Ricky Rubio. I mean, you think about it. They got four guys now that can handle the point guard spots, right? You got a Kobo, Carter, Ty Jerome, and Cameron Payne. Four guys. You know, you just want one. You want one quality backup, but it's hard to get a good backup point guard. It's really difficult. I mean, Ricky Rubio has been good for this basketball team because look, the Suns had a hard time getting a good point guard to run the show, to be the number one guy. And then they got Rubio, who is a true number one point guard. He's not great, but he's adequate, and he's a good player. But getting a backup, they'll give Cameron Payne a look and see if he works. But if not, they'll be back at it in the offseason trying to get somebody.
Monty Williams was also talking about another Cam today. That is Cam Johnson, the Suns' sharp-shooting wing player, and said that he has been blown away with how Cam Johnson has improved over this COVID break.
I see Cam as a guy that's going to run with this. The first day I saw him when he got back in town, I was blown away at the changes that he's already made in his body and just watching him on the floor move and shoot the ball. Obviously, we know Cam can shoot the ball, but he looks like, and I could be wrong, but he looks like he added some muscle.
Which is something that young man desperately needed to do, is add on a little bit of bulk.
You know, and you see, I was talking with Herm Edwards about this the other day with Jaden Daniels, because Jaden looks like he's 155 pounds soaking wet. And, you know, he was talking about it when he gets out of here, he might be like 210 or something. And, you know, Cam, he came into the league, he's such a skinny guy. And, you know, that added muscle will help him. You know, it'll help him defend better and last longer, and endurance and stamina and everything. And, you know, you expect that. A kid comes into the league, and now, you know, he wasn't a kid. He was older. He wasn't like a freshman coming out, so he was a little bit older. But these guys need some time to mature and get stronger.
And that's the thing, is when you think about this Suns team, there was so many, I think, positive things that we're starting to see before the shutdown of COVID. I mean, Cam Johnson was starting to find a bit of a niche, a bit of a role within the rotation. Mikal Bridges was starting to play very well offensively to complement his defensive skills. And that's one of the things that I'm really looking forward about, to seeing the Suns in Orlando. I'm not expecting them to make some sort of miraculous playoff run, but I just want to see these young pieces that are pieces that hopefully will be here for a little while, guys like DeAndre Ayton and Cam Johnson. I want to see those guys continue to make improvements during this stretch in Orlando.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's the number one thing we're looking at, right? We're not expecting that they're going to make the playoffs, but what we're hoping for is we're hoping that, you know, it's just, you know, just another, again, another training camp for Monty, more work with the guy. Coaching is so important for young players, right? Coaching. And for a lot of these players, you know, you get the opportunity that eight teams are not getting. And you don't have the pressure like these other teams to just win a championship. If you're any of the teams that have a legitimate shot of going far in the playoffs, those coaches are going to play their best players. They're not looking to develop the younger players. Where Monty has the luxury of getting 11 games, 3 preseason, 8 regular season, and developing these players, developing the younger players, and working with them so they can become better. Because, you know, in the end, coaching is very, very important for players, you know, under the age of 25. Important for everybody, but more important for those younger players.
If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to the Burns and Gambo podcast. You can do it right now on your iPhone or Android, and you'll never miss any of the show. It's the Burns and Gambo podcast, brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealers. The NBA is looking to ramp up their bubble under the Orlando Disney plan. But there is another professional sports league out there already in Orlando that could give the NBA some major concerns. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
All right, this is the story that really caught my eye today when Jordan told me about it. 6 FC Dallas players, a soccer league, tested positive for COVID-19. They're going to play in Orlando. Now, here's where the story gets interesting, because the NBA is going to Orlando in the bubble, as everybody knows. Now, a lot of people may not follow the MLS, but soccer is back. They've got a tournament beginning in Orlando. Teams are starting to show up. But to me, this is where it gets interesting. On Wednesday, so this team, FC Dallas, and I'm sure a lot of you do follow this. This team on Wednesday, they tested everybody that was traveling. Everybody was negative. They tested everybody on Wednesday. They left on Saturday. When they showed up on Saturday, they did tests again. 2 players were positive. Those players were immediately isolated from their teammates. The entire Dallas FC Dallas delegation, other clubs, staff, they isolated everybody. They continued to do testing, and 4 more players tested positive. So that's 6 players in less than a week. On Wednesday, they said, okay, we'll leave it in a couple days. Let's test everybody. They tested them. Everybody was negative. They leave a couple days later. They get there. 2 players are positive. They do another test a day later. 4 more players are positive. That's not really a good sign for anybody going to Orlando, or just for any team in particular. I mean, I don't know that this is going to be the norm. I had an MLB player tell me I'm expecting 5 to 10 positive tests on every team. It's just, you know, people are coming in from Venezuela. They're coming in from Puerto Rico. They're coming in from the Dominican. We've got guys coming in from Florida and Arizona and Texas. But this one is, out of all of the stories on teams and players testing positive, this one, I think, hits kind of close to home because of just how quickly they went from having all of these negative tests to having 6 positive tests.
Well, and especially that the positive test came up while they were preparing to enter into the bubble. And you and Bernsey have already gone over some of the very healthy protocols that are in place for the NBA's bubble in Orlando, where when players first get there, they're going to have to quarantine for 24 to 48 hours in their hotel rooms and pass a couple of tests before they're allowed back into the bubble. That's what's terrifying about this, is that even with all of these procedures in place, the bubble is not 100% safe. You brought up a while ago about the so-called bubble that is in the MGM Grand in Las Vegas for boxing, and how that they were having positive tests within that bubble. I think that's one thing that we're all just going to have to wrap our heads around. And if you're one of the members of these leagues, you're going to have to come to terms with it and be okay with it. That even though there are safety precautions put in place, it doesn't mean that it's 100% safe and that you're now immune from contracting this virus.
No, I just think if this, like, unless, like, okay, a real bubble would be you don't go anywhere. Like, we have complete control over, you know, you're not going to see anybody but these players, and these players are only going to see you. And if everybody's negative, we're going to keep you negative. But the second you allow, you test the players on Wednesday, they go home, they go to the grocery store, they take the kids out for ice cream, they go see friends, like, they get in an Uber, okay, great, you tested them Wednesday. What we're finding out is it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. Okay, you tested them Wednesday because you wanted to make sure that everybody traveling was negative, but you ended up with two positive tests once you got there. That means that those two guys were positive when they got on the plane.
Yeah.
They were positive. You landed, you tested them, and then the test came back positive. The thing is, like, you can't, you know, it's not like you could, the test is, okay, we're going to test you before you get on the plane. Now, maybe they could have done, like, temperature tests and stuff like that. And I don't know if they did that or not. But they felt, this soccer team, FC Dallas, felt like, okay, we tested everybody Wednesday, we're good. You guys got on a plane, we're going there. And then they find out, like, they got six guys that are positive? I mean, that's, now you would think, right, this is what you would think. Two players were positive, and they passed it on to four other players. Because when they got there, only two players were positive. And then a day later, four more players were positive. So those guys, because there's an incubation period, right? It takes a little time for it to get from your, you know, from your nose and your throat into your blood. I mean, that's what from my understanding of it. But they leave Wednesday. You know, they test everybody Wednesday. They feel good. They travel Saturday. They feel good. 2 days later, like, oh my God, we got six positive tests. How did that happen?
Even under the best intentions, there are going to be positive tests. And then where it becomes even scarier is when the conditions aren't perfect. And what I mean by that is a quote today from Damian Lillard of the Portland Trail Blazers. He was on a conference call today, and he was asked by reporters what his confidence level is for NBA players 100% adhering to the safety and health protocols for their bubble in Orlando. Here's what he had to say, quote, "My confidence isn't great. My confidence isn't great because you're telling me you're going to have 22 teams full of players following all the rules. When we have 100% freedom, everybody doesn't follow all the rules. I don't have much confidence, but hopefully it'll be handled to a point where we're not putting everybody at risk or in a dangerous position." So, I mean,
you know how I feel about this.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, this is like, you know, I mean, maybe the sport has to police itself, that the veteran players are going to have to say, look, I mean, you're not leaving. If you leave, you're not playing, and you're not going to risk, you know, me and my family. So you're not leaving. So deal with it. And maybe you just got to make sure everybody knows beforehand. Listen, if you're getting on this plane and you're going to Orlando, you're going to follow the rules. And that's what it's going to be. I've told you, I've talked to players that who a lot of them say that the single guys are very concerned that they're going to be without female companionship for maybe 3 months. And, you know, would those guys risk going out and not playing? Probably not. But could I see them trying to figure out a way to sneak somebody in? Yeah. Yeah, I could. I could see them trying to, hey, listen, cleaning lady, I'll give you $2,000 if, you know, you meet this person here and you let them have your pass to get in. I'll give you $2,000. You know, I mean, who's to say that somebody's not going to try something crazy like that and sneak somebody in? They could.
I almost guarantee that someone has been contemplating that, thinking about ways that they can get around it. But all you have to do is keep in mind that if you're going to go down that road, then not only are you putting yourself at risk, you're putting your teammates and everyone else in that NBA bubble at risk. Because it might be all well and good in the everyday normal world right now, where you might even have coronavirus and you're asymptomatic and you don't feel any of the symptoms and it doesn't seem to be affecting you. But if you bring that, if you bring someone in who, under a bubble where you're getting tested all of the time, there are going to be no slips in the crack. And that could be catastrophic to a team or the whole plan in Orlando for the NBA if someone sneaks someone past the security.
Yeah, like I said, I don't really anticipate that a guy's going to leave. Maybe they do. I mean, maybe somebody's stupid enough and selfish enough to say, okay, I'm going to leave. I got to get out of here. I'm going stir crazy. I got to get out. Maybe there's a player that will do that. But they know the risk, right? The risk is great. Hey, you're not going to play. You're out. You're kicked off the team. You're done. You know, you leave, you can't come back and play. So those guys know that rule. But again, like, what I keep thinking is, man, who's to say somebody's not going to try to sneak somebody in? You got a girlfriend, you know somebody, hey, they want female companionship. It's, you know, you'll come up with a way to sneak somebody in. You might do it. And now that puts everybody else in jeopardy. But you're not thinking that way. You're just thinking, hey, I want to have my friend come in.
Well, they need to be thinking that way. I mean, they need to. We all need to be thinking that way, in all honesty. It's just it hasn't translated to the rest of the population.
I have no intentions of sneaking anybody into my house.
Well, that's a good call. I'm sure Chelsea's happy about that. Yeah. That you're not trying to pass anything by her.
No, I'm not sneaking anybody in. But it's clearly, you know, a concern with the NBA. I spoke with an NBA player today who's been tested four times. And, you know, he was saying to me, what's the number? Like, what's the number of positive tests that could cancel this thing? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, right now you got 16 out of 302. Is it 30? Is it 40? Is it 50? Is it 75? I mean, is there a number where you're like, okay, you know, it's too risky. We can't play. I know that they really want to get him to the bubble so that way they can control it. Like, the concern right is now. The NBA is really concerned with, they have no control over it right now. They're testing every other day, guys, but they can't control it. But once they get to the bubble, then they feel like they'll have a lot more control out of it.
Coming up next here on the Burns and Gambo show, there is a chance that NFL fans could be in stadium to watch their favorite teams this fall, but they might have to jump through a few hoops to do so. We'll tell you what we're talking about next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
All right, we had an interesting poll question today on the Burns and Gambo page on Twitter, and I think did we get over 2,000 votes on this so far, Sarah?
Oh, yeah, we're at almost at 2,300.
2,300 votes.
Popular
on
one
that.
Today.
I know.
2,311,
excuse me.
I just looked
yes,
now.
Yes, we've exceeded 2,300.
2,311, and it is our Sanderson Ford poll question. Sanderson Ford on 51st Avenue in Glendale, sandersonford.com if you want to check them out. What is our question today, and what are our results?
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
All right, the question today, this is something that you guys have talked about and I imagine we'll revisit shortly on the show. Per a report from The Athletic today, the NFL is looking at requiring fans to sign COVID-19 liability waivers if they plan to attend games this year. If you are required to sign a waiver to go to a game, would you do it? The three options for you to pick from: yes, fine by me, I'll sign a waiver to go to a game; no, won't sign a waiver, I will stay at home; or our third option, I will only go to a game without signing a waiver.
I think that this changes as time goes by. And I could see a lot of people being reluctant to go to any sporting event right now with the numbers in Arizona so high. I voted for I would go without signing a waiver, but I could clearly see how other people may be like, yeah, I'd rather just stay at home and watch it.
No, and also, if you're going to go to a game and if you feel comfortable with it, I feel like you have to adhere to the protocols and the measures of that specific building or business or team event. So, I mean, if you're going to the store right now and the store mandates that you put on a mask, you put on a mask. Same thing with this. If you're going to go to a football game and they're going to say, hey, you have to sign this waiver, then if I'm going to go to the game already, then yeah, I'll sign the waiver, because I think most people know the type of risk that they're taking by doing that in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, right now, let's see. I think it was just shy of 57%. Okay.
It was 56.3% to 42.2%.
Okay. So it has, it is still, yes, fine by me in the lead, and it's only gone up a couple decimal percentage points, you know what I'm saying. 57% right now say yes, fine by me, I'll go to a game and I will sign a waiver to do so. 41% say I will stay at home, I'm not touching that. And then just shy of 2% say they will go to a game, but only if they are not expected to sign a waiver.
All right, that is our Sanderson Ford poll question. It's a good one, and it is also our top topic today. How about you guys? Jordan, Sarah, would you go to a game right now without signing if you had to sign a waiver?
Yeah, I mean, I probably would. I mean, a lot of it depends on the details, social distancing, how close am I to other people. The one thing, though, that I keep thinking about with the Cardinals that really affects me and my want to go to games is so much of our Cardinal experience is built around tailgating and being there with, you know, 15, 20 other people that we meet up with at halftime and things like that. If they aren't selected to go and I'm selected to go, I don't know how eager I am just to be there kind of by myself. You know what I mean? It's part of the overall game day experience of the people around you and the friends that you don't only see during football season. without that, I'm fine not going to the games, in all honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about you, Sarah?
I am not comfortable going at this point, and I'm guessing it'll be a couple months before I would be comfortable. The waiver itself is not an issue for me. If I felt ready to go, I would be fine signing a waiver. But just in my personal place right now, I am not ready to go to an NFL game.
All right. Well, let's talk about it, because that is one of the big stories that was out there today. NFL may ask fans to sign COVID-19 liability waivers to attend games. Now, this story in Athletic, there were some people that said, well, you know, you could sign a waiver. I mean, President Trump had a rally in Tulsa last month, and they required people to sign COVID-19 liability waivers. But some people question whether they are truly legal shield for the event organizers. Can you sign a waiver and then still sue? One guy said, one lawyer I said, said a plaintiff attorney said, strange things about waivers. They're fragile, often easily breakable, especially as I assume here when you're asking fans to waive their rights, even if the NFL is negligent, grossly negligent. You know, other people say, okay, well, you know, it's, you know, governed by state law and, you know, they're legitimate. I don't know. I don't know. But I think, I mean, I would expect that they will do everything they can to try to protect the teams from being sued by fans. So if they do end up with fans in the stand, which doesn't look likely, but if they do, they very well could ask you to sign a waiver.
And just because the NFL teams ask you to sign a waiver doesn't mean that they're going to throw all of the other safety and health precautions out the window. I mean, you're still going to be under social distancing. You talked earlier about cashless pay, that if there's concession stands open, you're not touching cash and passing it off to someone else. The NFL is still going to take steps to ensure that people are as safe as they possibly can. It's just an acknowledgement, the waiver liability, it's just an acknowledgement that they cannot 100% protect you.
Yeah. The Falcons are the only team in the NFL, the only one that has, that's all cashless. Cash doesn't work in the stadium. They're the only one. And others are going to switch to it too, right? Because, you know, we said it yesterday. You come in and, you know, you come in with a $20 bill and you have it in your hands and then you give it to the cashier and then she puts it in the register. Next guy comes in with $100 and then so then, the cashier takes it out and then gives it to that guy. Then later on he wants to go buy ice cream. He takes that $20, gives it to somebody else, and all of a sudden, you know, cash is changing hands 4, 5, 6 times a day. It's possible that could happen. So cashless seems to be the way a lot of these teams are looking to go. Touchless transaction, just viewed cleaner than money. No tickets, right? Exchanging tickets. They want to do as much as possible to not have anybody have to touch anything that anybody else is touching in sports going forward. And listen, it probably is going to end up being the new norm.
There are still so many issues, though, that they have to figure out if fans are really going to be allowed. I mean, you can distance.
We're in July now, so like to me, like all bets are off. Like in March and in April and in May, we got time. Now we're in July. There's preseason football next month, so I can't see how anybody is looking to have fans in the stands right now. That's me. I don't see that happening especially with the rate of the virus and some of these states being so high.
Well,
time will tell.
The logistics of it. Even if you only allow 10,000 fans into State Farm Stadium, are you going to dictate what time those fans have to show up so that you can socially distance the entrance into the stadium? Are you going to say, this section, you're allowed to go to the bathroom during the first quarter, and this section, you're allowed to go in the second quarter? Because how else can you prevent a backup, a buildup, a line at the bathroom? I guess you can keep the line 6 feet, as we see at a lot of grocery stores and Home Depots and stuff like that. The other big thing, just as a fan and a ticket holder myself, that I don't understand how they're going to come across this problem is that if you are a high-paying season ticket holder, if you spend a lot of money for great seats, how are you guaranteed that you're still going to have that good of a seat? And if they are socially distancing you, how do they determine that the person in row 3, seat 1 through 2, gets to stay in their seat, but the people next to them, you get to be moved somewhere where it's not as great of a seat, but you're still paying that top dollar? I think there are so many headaches that are going to have to be figured out that I think, in all honesty, the most likely thing and the easiest thing is just not to allow fans, period.
Yeah, but the revenue aspect, right? I mean, if you can get a third of the fans in, if you can get 25,000 fans into the stadium, I mean, that's a lot of revenue.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of money that's going to be lost. What do we say, $1 billion? Some crazy amount of money that was going to be lost, you know, with the NFL if there's no fans. I mean, a lot of money. So, like, you know, the business part of it is, I mean, we can't deny that, right? That this is a business, and these businesses are going to be like, okay, if the state allows it and we can put 25,000 people in the stands, we're going to put 25,000 people in the stands. We'll make you sign a waiver, but we're going to allow those fans to come in because there's just so much money at stake.
It is. I mean, we're still talking about businesses. We're still talking about trying to make as much money as possible, but I think there's also an obligation by these teams that if you are going to have fans, you need to try to do it as responsibly as you possibly can.
NFL will reportedly lose $5.5 billion if games are played in empty stadiums.
Yeah. I mean, you had a number.
$5.5 billion.
You said for the Cardinals a couple of days ago, or maybe it was last week or so, that the Cardinals could lose up to $400 million with no fans.
$400 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, $400 million for them. If NFL teams play games without fans, the league could lose $5.5 billion, according to Forbes. Figures based on stadium revenue from 2018. $5.5 billion. Now, all teams would be, you know, impacted differently, but they say the Cowboys and the Patriots would lose over half their total revenue. The Bills, the Titans, the Bengals would lose less than a third. So everybody's different. But, yeah, what, you know, the number I had was about $400 million for the Cardinals if there's no fans in the stand. I mean, so I think everybody's going to look at it and say, okay, well, if the state allows it, well, then I'll try it. I'll see. Because there are fans, I mean, come on, you know this. There are a lot of Cardinal fans that be like, I'll go.
Yeah.
I'm dying to go to a game. I'll go to the game.
Well, look at our poll question. I mean, the majority of the people on our poll question said if I had to sign a liability waiver, 57% say, yeah, I'd sign it and I'd be fine to go to a game. So, I mean, that's the majority of our listeners or the majority of the people that voted on that poll that are in that camp that, yeah, I'm fine with it. I'll go to a game right now if all of the circumstances are correct.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, that's what I was saying, you know, people that message me on Twitter and stuff, and I'm like, look, like, you know, this is a tough topic to talk about because so many people feel so differently. Wear a mask, don't wear a mask. Shut down the state, don't shut down the state. Is it political, is it not political? I mean, everybody, there's so many people that have different opinions on this. Yeah, I feel safe, I'll go to the guy, I don't feel safe. Like there are so many different opinions, you know, on what's going on, you know, here in Arizona or in different parts of the country that, you know, I find this to be a difficult topic to talk about, you know, and I think, you know, we try to be balanced, try to be fair throughout this whole thing and bring up both sides of it. But it is, you know, it is something that if they allow fans in, everybody, you know, people that have tickets, you're going to have to make up your own mind. I mean, if they allow you in and you want to go, you'll be able to go.
Coming up next here on the Burns and Gambo Show. As of right now, the Pac-12 college football season is still on. But what's going to happen to the conference and those teams if they're going to have to start canceling games? We'll dive into that next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Little Thin Lizzy right there.
There you go.
I always said Mitch plays better music than you. You never give me any good rock music.
Well, because usually when I give you stuff that you like, it turns into a 5-6 minute conversation about how much you like about that song.
I mean, you can throw a couple of rock songs in there.
Oh, I know it doesn't have to be. That's just how it typically plays out.
Just a good Thin Lizzy song right there. The boys are back in town. Now, listen, I'll prove to you right now. We could absolutely move on and go right into a topic because I do want to talk a little bit about college football. There's a lot of stuff going on. I want to start with the Big 12. The Big 12 is among several leagues considering moving back their championship game. The Big 12 championship game is set for December 5th, AT&T Stadium in Texas. They want to add flexibility for makeup games. So the thought is that they might have to. They might be a week they don't have enough players to play, and they might have to say, "Okay, we got to push the schedule. We got to put." So in discussions now to possibly move back the championship game. These teams are bracing for the fact that they might have some weeks where they're not able to field the football team.
That's a distinct possibility, and I don't know if pushing back that championship weekend just in a couple of weeks really is going to be all that much. I mean, if you're talking about significant COVID cases popping up on a college football team, well, everything that we've been hearing is that that's at least a two-week process of allowing those players to get healthy and quarantine and then check out the rest of your team. If you're pushing it back, you know, more than 2 weeks, really, you're going to really start to butt up against some of those timelines. The other thing about this is, let's say the Big 12, let's use them just as the example. If they're able to play their full season, if they're able to play their full schedule, and other conferences or other teams within those conferences aren't able to match the same amount of games being played, how is that going to factor in into polls, college football playoff rankings? There's going to be, unless it's a level playing field, there's going to have to be a lot of considerations about how this season ultimately looks, and if there is a full season, how you ultimately crown a champion.
Yeah, let's go Pac-12. Carl Durrell, the coach of Colorado, said him and other coaches have debated and forecasted numerous scenarios, including playing a partial season and the possibility of forfeiting games if an opponent's lineup is significantly affected by COVID-19. So Carl Durrell talking about a partial season, which to me that would mean eliminating non-conference games. And then what happens again if an opponent's lineup is significantly affected and they would have to forfeit the game?
I wonder what the benchmark is going to be for that. I mean, because significantly affected can mean multiple things to multiple teams. If you're starting quarterback, if you're ASU and Jaden Daniels gets COVID and he's out, your team has now been significantly affected with just one player. But I know it's talking more about the actual numbers. We're asking the same thing about baseball and the NBA. How many positive tests is it going to take for it to shut down a baseball team or the Orlando bubble? Same question could be thrown to a college football team. How many positive tests before you're going to have to forfeit a game?
Well, that's what we've heard from even, you know, quarantining the backup quarterback, like for the week of the game.
That was Bruce Arians.
Yeah. Quarantine the backup quarterback. I've heard it from others, too, even in college football. The Louisville AD said, look, if you're down a third of your team, you know, you've got to really think about, you know, not playing that game because it's just it'd be almost impossible.
So think about Clemson. Think about Clemson. One third of their team has already tested positive for COVID. If that had happened in the season and now Clemson has to forfeit games that are not even going to be played, that takes them out of the national title picture. I mean, if you're going to have one or two forfeited losses on your resume without even playing the games, that can significantly impact how this all happens. And you're talking about the Pac-12, the Colorado coach. He was also wondering just how bowl eligibility is going to go about this season.
Yeah, I don't even think they'll care about playing the bowl games as long as they can get the regular season in. They may want to get the championship games, you know, because that's the big money right there. You know, they make sure that you have your championship games because, again, that's where all the money is. And maybe the most important games, the Rose Bowl, the Fiesta Bowl. But a lot of those second-tier bowl games, I mean, if they've got to cancel them, I mean, I think that they would. But I think the championship games they've got to go to. Here's the thing I was talking about. One Power 5 conference coach told ESPN that he planned to completely revamp roommate assignments to make sure, for instance, that quarterbacks weren't rooming with each other. Another Power 5 coach said he might toy with the idea of practicing the first unit against the third in one session and the second against the walk-ons in a separate session just to make sure that you don't lose one whole unit.
Well, there was even another coach in that email that you sent out that you're alluding to right here that said we might have to have some of our wide receivers cross-train at safety or cornerback, that if our numbers get devastated in one position, we might have to have guys go both ways or cover multiple positions. I mean, Now you're talking about Iron Man football here in a sense where you could see a wide receiver also playing a little bit of cornerback.
Yeah, and next week the Ivy League is going to make a decision on whether they're going to play fall sports. A final decision, not like, you know, like by July 8th, they want a final decision on whether they're going to play fall sports. And right now, I mean, you know, it is still early. I get it. Not too early, though. The way things are going, you've got to think they're seriously considering just canceling fall sports. But July 8th, they're expected to make a final decision on whether they'll have fall sports in the Ivy League.
The curious thing about the Ivy League is will others catch on with their football idea, their football plan, whatever that might be, just the way that teams start, or I should say conferences, started to catch on with what they did with basketball. Because you mentioned it earlier, the Ivy League was the first college basketball league to cancel their conference tournament. And at the time, everyone was like, well, this is a little bit premature. I mean, why are you doing? And then we just saw a flood of other conferences coming in, canceling their conference tournament. So the Ivy League has been a little bit of a trend setter in this when it comes to college athletics. And I would hate to see college football follow this trend as well, depending on what they might do, because one of their options is pushing the season all the way until April.
Yeah, which is crazy, because that had been a discussion for a while. I mean, could you just not have college football in the fall and play it in the winter? But then you start to think about players that are going to the draft, and then, you know, if you're a player and you're going to go in the NFL, would you even play if you're just 2 months away from the draft? I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of variables to move in this schedule like that, television variables and everything, but if they feel like it's such a big, big money generator, football is in college sports. So if they feel like, hey, we're much better off playing in the spring than the fall, and we could recoup all this money, who knows? Maybe that becomes a discussion in the next couple of weeks with some of these, you know, presidents. And the SEC probably will go about their own and just play. But, I mean, some exactly. of these other conferences might think it's better to push the season off.
Coming up next here on the Burns and Gambo Show, in the NFL, there have been some radical ideas thrown out about how to protect these teams from COVID-19. The latest one could significantly impact the way football teams travel to their games on Sunday. We'll tell you what we're talking about next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.